The Roar, now offering great sports talk around the clock. We are The Roar, part of the ESPN family.
Hour number two of the program here on a Wednesday with Fax and Childress and John Hyde on 105.5-97.5 The Roar. And I've been waiting all week for this segment because we've been very critical of the Clemson offensive line play. John, I need Landon Walker to tell me everything's going to be okay.
Well, I don't know if he's going to do that, but he's certainly going to give us some thoughts on the Clemson offensive line and the Clemson football team right now. Member of the William Byron Race team and former Clemson offensive lineman Landon Walker joins us. Landon, how you doing this morning?
Guys, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. And you know, I've been listening all week. What a week it's been for you guys. You know, and I wanted to listen because I wanted to know what I'm getting myself into here. But obviously, I've been hearing a little bit of everything with what you guys have been dealing with the fans and, you know, the talk of the offensive line and the offense and the defense and everything. So obviously excited to give my take on it. But, you know, obviously there's a lot to talk about.
There's certainly a lot to talk about, and let's start with that unit up front on the offense, this offensive line right now. What do you make of what we're seeing and what we're not seeing from Matt Luke's group up front right now?
Yeah, so, John, you know, I watched the game again last night and really wanted to just get a better idea and understanding, because sometimes when you're watching the game in real time, you're not really seeing everything that's happening. So from my perspective, you know, the basic thing that I saw was just misassignments. You know, I saw some misassignments and obviously some bad technique at times. I hate to throw this unit under the bus, because I don't think that it's a getting out physical problem we have. You know, I think there's a lot of different opinions on that. But in my personal opinion, I think that there's a lot of correctable things that are happening up front, and it's not necessarily, you know, it's a lot of mental errors. You know, you're talking about going down the field the first drive, and you know, it was a touchdown, but you know, you have a snap infraction there. So those types of things obviously cannot happen in order to put your offense in a worse position. You know, you put the playbook in a worse position and everything. So the simple things I'm just seeing like that, you know, just not being able to use your feet correctly, not making an out call when you have a corner blitz, and being able to pick up that blitz and take some pressure off of Cade and make him more comfortable to be able to do what he needs to do back there.
What do you make of, you know, the former position that you played, of what Blake Miller did in this game? Before we guide you on air in the last segment, I was very critical of 78's play. I think that it was just, quite simply, it's not good, and that's not winning football, what he put on the field Saturday. What are your thoughts at that right tackle position right now?
Listen, I think Blake is a veteran guy, and I think the expectations are very high for being a veteran. I've been there with a lot of snaps under my belt and a lot of starts under my belt. You know, obviously, he didn't play good enough to have a good game, right? And I think I've had games like that. You know, I have to raise my hand. I've had games where I didn't play very well, but, you know, the things that he's doing are correctable. You know, obviously, a veteran guy people expect more of, but being able to have those missed assignments and, you know, the offsides penalties, being able to put your offense in a bad position are just things that cannot happen. And especially a game when you're in a hole, right? You've started the game essentially behind the eight ball before your offense even gets on the field. And so when momentum and, you know, tempo are part of your offensive game plan, and that's really what you're banking on having, and you're not getting it because you're having snap infractions and you're having offside penalties, those things are just, you're creating so many self-inflicted wounds before you can get down the field. So obviously I think the play can be better there, but I think there's so much room for improvement from him, and I think that he's very capable. We've seen him do really well in the past. I think the guy has what it takes. It's just going to have some mental preparation, some mental focus.
Yeah, and we're continuing to visit with Landon Walker, former Clemson offensive lineman. Landon, I'm not a football savant. I'm 170 pounds soaking wet, and it's probably a good thing I never played the sport. But I do watch a lot of film,
okay,
talk
man.
To a lot of coaches, offensive line is an area where I don't have a great understanding of technique, but I think I do have a good understanding of when something's going wrong, if that makes sense. You use that word missed assignment, and that's what I see a lot of on tape looking back at this Syracuse game. Is there anything that you can pinpoint as to what the rationale or reasoning could be for that? Because this is a group that I expected cohesion from, and this is a group, to be frank, that we saw cohesion from down the stretch last season where Cade Klubnik and this offense started putting up some big-time numbers. I guess my question for you is, what is the root of these missed assignments, and why is there not more cohesion on a unit that has so much experience playing together?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I don't know if it's mental preparation. I don't know if these guys are preparing themselves as well as they could be. I'm not sure what the actual reasoning is for having these missed assignments. You know, I've been in a lot of games and a lot of scrimmages where you have those mistakes and you learn from them and you correct them. You know, you have to be able to understand that on a fourth and two situation when you're a pulling guard, you have to be able to make a play on a blitzing safety in order to produce and keep that offense on the field. And like I said, these are setbacks with missed assignments and obviously technical issues that create a bad situation for your offense. So, you know, I'm not really sure why they're happening, but at the same time, I'm a glass half full guy, and I see that these things are correctable. They're not just, hey, we're just getting thrown around up front. I think that at times, you know, there could have been a more push off the ball for sure, but at the same time, I think that I see a lot of things that are correctable on tape, and I think that these guys they aren't really playing with a cumulative effect up front. They're not playing together. I think the communication could be better, especially when I'm talking about, you know, you have blitzes and you got four guys down and they're blitzing a fifth guy. You've got to be able to move that offensive line over to where that blitz is coming from. And those things are, you know, that's basic, you know, missed assignment football. If you have pressure on your quarterback, he's going to have to make bad decisions. So, like I said, you know, I know there's a lot of pressure on Cade Klubnik to play better, but you've got to help the guy out. And, you know, I think there's, you know, a lot of blame to go around in this whole situation, but everything's correctable. And that's the positives I do see, is it is correctable. And it is, you know, you come out and don't have those issues as an offense. We're talking completely different about this team this week.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And Landon, another question, and it's going to be about that communication and pre-snap ID stuff. So went back, watched all the tape, got PFF's premium stats pulled up for NCAA. I think that's the best way to just kind of take a step back and view what's happening on the offensive line. So while the offensive line allowed zero sacks on Saturday and only two quarterback hits, they allowed 19 hurries and 21 pressures out of 60 passing attempts for quarterback Cade Klubnik. Do you attribute that more to what we're talking about pre-snap ID? Because, again, I'm not a football savant by any means, but when an undetected rusher is flying at the quarterback, that has to be some level of communication mishap, whether that be the quarterback's lack of ability to assess the defense at the line of scrimmage, IDing the mic, seeing a nickel blitz coming off the edge, or whether the offensive line's not pulling their weight helping them out. How do you think Cade Klubnik and this offensive line can step forward with communication at the line of scrimmage and accurately identifying the opposing defense?
Yeah, you have to do a better job of pre-snap identification. I think that's ultimately where a lot of those pressures came from. And, you know, you have five guys to block four. Obviously, you have a guy blitzing from the corner. You have to be able to shift the offensive line. That's definitely something that can be called at the offensive line standpoint. You know, as a right tackle, I used to make those calls. You see a guy creeping down and it's a late blitz, you've got to be able to yell, you know, out, whatever that call may be for this team. They have to make that identification. And, you know, some of those pressures, we're not always all on the offensive line, you know, watching the game.
Agreed.
You know, Randall's doing a great job at running back, but obviously people also got to realize this is his first time playing running back. This is his first time in the backfield. You know, he's learning to block. And that's obvious. You know, he's putting himself in a situation where he's having to take on that fifth or sixth man sometimes. And, you know, he's getting a little pressure in Cade's face as well. So I think that blame can go around a little bit. But obviously, when you have a quarterback who's feeling the pressure, who's the blitz is coming, when it's probably, you know, that shift could happen and take a little bit of that pressure off him to make a better decision. You know, those things need to happen, right? Those little communication lines need to correlate down that line. And so when you see that happen, it's a beautiful thing, because that's when big plays are made. So obviously I know that this is something that they're definitely looking at the tape. They understand it just as much as you and I do that see it to the naked eye. So I think it's something that can be improved on for sure.
Landon, if you were If Coach Sweeney decided today to employ you as one of the offensive line coaches.
Oh, boy.
It's hypothetical. You're in NASCAR for a reason, right?
I'm not. For sure. Absolutely. I understand.
If you were in the building this week and you had the opportunity to be in that offensive line meeting room, what would you say to these guys? Like, what would be your messaging in a bye week where it just hasn't been, the results haven't been what you wanted up front? What would you be trying to message to these guys in the week off without an opponent on Saturday?
Yeah, what I would say to these guys, in my opinion, is your hardest workers are always your best players. And, you know, we're not seeing the best players be your hardest workers. And I think that not taking away from the physical toughness of this team, I'm not trying to take a shot at them because I do think this is a tough football team. I think they have the opportunity to be a better football team. But I would say to them, if you want to be the best player, you have got to be the best worker on the practice field, on the game field, whatever it takes for you to be the example. That's the type of guys that I played with. We worked very hard on the field because we knew we weren't playing against, you know, there's a reason we're playing offensive line. Those guys on the opposite side of the ball, they could run 4.5 40s and were 270 pounds. Sorry, I'm just not that athletic. But at the same time, I'm going to use every bit of technique that I've learned over my time at Clemson to be able to stop this guy, to be able to get in front of him for 3 to 4 seconds to give Cade some time. And I think that's what you have to do. We obviously know that we're not going to out-athlete these guys at defensive end, at linebacker, at corner, at safety, but we have got to do a good job of communicating and put ourselves in front of them with technique, with communication. Those are the things that are on your side at offensive line, and you have to use those in a game. And when you don't have those, it's evident what happens when they're not being assessed. So it's, you know, it's just one of those things. Like I said, I would love to be able to speak with them about that. But at the same time, look, these guys got great coaches. You know, they know what's going on. They know what they have to fix, especially with the open week this weekend. I think it's really great for this team to be able to look at this film as much as they can, prepare better, get better, and we'll see what happens on the field in Chapel Hill.
Landon, I got a couple more questions for you. Again, I'm not a guru by any means, and I'll never know the feeling of having to protect a quarterback against NFL-caliber edges like you did back in the day.
Yeah.
But I do also see a couple things on tape, and again, this might be the same, you know, line of communication errors or pre-snap ID, but I want to hyperfixate on the guards specifically for a second. It feels like there's a lot of times on tape, and correct me if you feel like I'm wrong with what you've seen, where there will be a guard blocking no one, or there will be a guard stranded on an island and it feels like there's nobody that they're assigned to, and whether that means the center and the left guard are double teaming one way and the right guard just has nowhere to go. What is the reason or the root for that? Because with a lot of these Twitter gurus that like to break down film, they always circle the guys that are blocking no one. Is there an explanation for that at times? And what is kind of your assessment on some of that happening for Clemson's offensive line?
Yeah, you know, I saw in the game on Saturday, a lot of they played some games up front, which what I mean by that, when your defensive end, he'll kind of switch with your defensive tackle. He's going to game your tackle. So he's going to create a twist situation when you have to switch off. And I saw an instance or two of those where the switch wasn't happening. Your guard wasn't getting to the defensive end in time for that tackle to cross over him to the outside to try to get pressure on the quarterback. Now, in that situation particularly, that is another communication failure. You have to be able to communicate those situations, and that's a live action communication, right? It's happening, and you see it happening, and you're like, switch, switch, switch. So the little things like that obviously can be improved on upon to help your guard free up that tackle a little bit, especially when they're running games up front. But you know, in particularly, you know, I think that it comes down to like what we just talked about. I think it's communication 100%. It's mental preparation, understanding what this team's going to do defensively, what they've done in the past when you watch their past film and who they played. Syracuse did a great job of creating pressure because they were doing something different up front almost the entire game. Whether they were bringing four or whether they were bringing five or six, they made it pretty difficult because they would bring a guy late most every play, and they figured out pretty quickly, if we can get pressure on Cade, we can make him make some decisions he's not comfortable making. So I think they put that, you know, in their game plan for a reason, and it ended up working.
Landon, final question I've got for you, and I'll throw it back to John for some closing comments. Is there the concept of playing, quote, and I'm going to use a basketball term here because I'm a basketball guy, is whoever offense a real thing on D-line headed onto the opposing O-line? Because it feels like there are a couple players, and again, don't want to call anybody out specifically, but Sadler, when Sadler's playing at left guard instead of being kicked out to tackle like he was against Georgia Tech, it feels like they're running stunts, twists, et cetera, whatever you may call it, to try and directly go at him. And it feels like they view the guard specifically as kind of the weak link at times on this Clemson offense. Is that a real thing in football? Do other D-lines try and pick on one specific player on the O-line or put their mind in a blender? Or is it more of just a general call and you get what you get up front?
No, I think the game plan is 100% geared towards finding the weakness. I think that any team's going to come into a game knowing where they have the advantage, whether it be the left side or the right side. And granted, you know, there's always going to be a weak link. And I don't mean that any disrespect. A guy that they feel like they can put a one-on-one matchup on and make it more challenging for him. So I think that that is absolutely part of a game plan for a defensive line, for a defensive analyst. So I think that you're looking at where are we going to be able to create the most pressure. And on film, they've seen where is the chain in the link. Where is it the weakest? And I'm not pointing any fingers by no means. I'm just saying this is what defensive coaches do. So, you know, in a situation at Clemson, you know, whether it be the left tackle, the right tackle, the right guard, the left guard, the center, they're going to put the best guy on the guy that they feel like can have the best advantage. So, to your point, yes, you know, one-on-one matchups on the defensive line absolutely matter.
Landon, I want you to give us something positive on the way out. I think Clemson football, we've had enough negativity here. What's going on in Kansas this weekend?
Well, I'll give you one thing positive on Clemson, and then we'll talk about Kansas.
The
one thing positive I want to say about Clemson football is I hear some words that Dabo used after the game on Saturday that really stuck with me. They asked him about how, you know, he was emotional after the game, and one thing that I really wanted to say was he said, you know, this is my life, man. So I think as a Clemson fan, as a former player, that right there means a lot to me. You know, this guy puts everything he's got into this program, and he was obviously emotional for a reason. He knows how much work it takes to put the product on the field, and especially when that product is not getting the job done like it should be. No one, I think, lives and dies by this program more than Coach Sweeney, you know, because at the end of the day, his responsibility is winning football games and doing what it takes to keep this Clemson community happy. So if there's anything to lead into positivity for the rest of the season, I think it would be look at the man who's leading the program. How much does he put into it? And I don't think you could ask for a better guy in the country who is giving everything he's got. Whether it's going great right now or not, you know that he's in the locker rooms, you know that he's in the meeting rooms, and he's doing everything it takes to turn this around. And, you know, to speak on Kansas, we're going to Kansas. We're second in points, doing really well. Looking forward to advancing into the next round, which would be the round of eight, and then on to the championship for there. So we're having a pretty good race last week and looking to put everything together in order to make it to the final round of four.
That's awesome. Landon Walker, former Clemson offensive lineman, member of the William Byron Race Team. You can see them 3 o'clock Eastern on Sunday with the Cup Series out there at Kansas. Landon, thank you for taking the time and look forward to talking to you next week before North Carolina.
Thank you guys for having me as always.
Appreciate you, Landon. 654 Roar is the number if you want to check in. Can I make a quick confession before we
please
take a break? I had never watched a NASCAR race before we started talking to Landon. He's the only reason I've ever watched one. So I watch his team whenever they're on. I try and keep up with it. Before that, I had like zero knowledge. Like I couldn't have even named you like the big dogs in the NASCAR world. That's just a gap of knowledge for me personally.
Yes, I never really watched a race until he and I became friends in college and, you know, got into it. And yeah, man, it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. I underrated NASCAR. I'll say that. That's another big takeaway from watching Landon's thing is Landon's team is you got some entertainment value there that I didn't know existed prior. So shout out to Landon. All right, quick break here on the program. More college football talk right after this.
60 years is a long time, especially when you're talking about how long a company has been in business. But that's exactly how long Joe Roberson and Son have been servicing and installing roofs right here in the upstate. 60 years. That means that many of the roofs you see every day, your neighbors, the roof at your favorite restaurant, or even the roofs you're driving past right now are likely a Joe Roberson and Son roof. Now you might be wondering why so many people here in the upstate have chosen Joe Roberson and Son for their roofing needs for six decades. And the answer is simple. They were founded on the principles of providing quality workmanship, fair pricing, and complete customer satisfaction. When you work with them, you won't pay a single dime until the job's been completed to your satisfaction. So if you have any roofing needs, do what so many people in the upstate have done for the past 60 years. Make it a Joe Roberson and Son roof. Call 246-0886. That's 246-0886. Or visit robersonroofing.net.
When making decisions, it's important to take a long view and consider how our choices will affect us for generations to come. Longview Carolina is a gated community that emphasizes that long view, with on-site gardens, miles of trails, mature forests, open meadows, and gathering spaces with 50-mile views, all designed to spark true community. Go to contact at longviewcarolina.com to schedule your private tour today. Longview Carolina, worlds apart, minutes away.
Book your next party at Carson Steakhouse in Anderson with a large private dining room to suit all of life's celebrations, corporate and social group events. Host a family or school reunion to remember. Book your reservation and they handle the rest. Double fried chicken wings, fresh baked yeast rolls, hand-cut steaks, grilled teriyaki salmon, and fresh strawberry shortcake, just to name a few delicious menu items. Make your reservation today. Call 226-9400. Again, that's 226-9400. Carson Steakhouse, Anderson.
Your access to cutting-edge pain relief just got even easier. QC Kinetics is now offering virtual consultations with new patients. If you're living with chronic joint pain, you can meet with a QC medical professional from the comfort of your own home. This new telemedicine platform is exciting. It's time-saving as well. They can do it by phone. They can do it by video conference. You're going to get one-on-one attention to evaluate your situation, to see if you're a candidate for regenerative medicine, to see if they can get you treatment scheduled right there on the spot for long-lasting pain relief. QC Kinetics, the leader in cellular technology, regenerative medicine, they're helping so many folks right now. If you tried the drugs, tried the steroids, tried the surgery, don't do that. Do it with QC Kinetics right now. Schedule that consultation. Do it online, 864-766-8454, 864-766-8454. Virtual consultation, fast, quick, and easy and convenient. Call now, 864-766-8454.
Parenting is hard. It's even harder if your child tells you they're in trouble with the law. What should you do next? Nick Lavery, Clemson's local attorney, is here to help. Nick and his legal team know the best options to help defend and protect your child and their future. Whether it's a DUI, minor in possession, public disorderly conduct, or a fake ID, Nick Lavery is here to help you and your child. For your free consultation, call 864-654-3680.
We're here, Eric Snyder, Snyder Tree Care. I always think about your company being a residential tree and shrub company, but from a commercial standpoint, you guys do a great job there as well, right, Eric?
We found that trees don't care where they grow. You know, if it's at your house or if it's at your business, they're still a tree, and we love trees. We love shrubs. In fact, you know, we are the tree care company for Clemson University. So, yeah, we do a lot of commercial work. Big properties, small properties. You can find us on the web at SnyderTree.com.
Leave it to Snyder Tree Care.
Is your crawl space damp or musty? Water in your crawl space can cause wood to rot and create an environment for mold and mildew that can make its way inside your home. Canty Foundation Specialist specializes in crawl space repair. Call us today for your free inspection so you can have the peace of mind knowing your crawl space is dry and your home is protected. Call today, 864-641-0176, or visit cantycanfixit.com.
Straight Up Sports is simply all sports all the time. Straight Up Sports is a collection of retired and award-winning sports writers and sports broadcasters from around South Carolina. Like Bob Gillespie from the State Newspaper, Scott Kiefer from the Greenville News, and Mark Sturgis from ESPN Upstate. Straight Up Sports is about the stories, just like the days gone by with no editors nor managers involved. Check us out on Facebook or Twitter or online at straightupsports.net.
Life doesn't wait, and neither should you. Aleve can help you deal with pain less throughout your day. Whether it's a long day on your feet, a demanding workout, or everyday aches and pains, you need relief that can keep up when pain persists. Aleve is here for you with longer-lasting body pain relief compared to leading OTC-branded pain relievers. With just one pill, Aleve lasts up to 12 hours. Don't let those aches hold you back from doing what's important to you. Use as directed.
Hi, I'm Michael from The War and Treaty. You know the jingle. Now discover the facts about Ozempic, a GLP-1. Only Novo Nordisk makes FDA-approved Ozempic. Learn about the real thing.
Talk to your healthcare professional today. Call 1-833-OZEMPIC or visit Ozempic.com to view the medication guide and to learn more about Ozempic. Semaglutide injection 0.5 milligram, 1 milligram, and 2 milligrams.
Oh, Broadcasting live from the Upcountry Fiber Studios, this is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John. Now let's get back to the show.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Faxon Childress and John Hite continues right here on The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to chime in on the phone lines or the Adams Co. Roofing text line. We would love to hear from you. I got a couple more thoughts on Clemson. We're going to recap some of Landon Walker's phone call, and then we're going to put this out of sight, out of mind. Start talking about some of the games from this past weekend, then shift gears into preview mode. Still got to run through our pick'em contest from the past weekend. I think I had a fine week. Hold on, let me check. I think, yeah, 6-4. Everybody's kind of jam-packed in like sardines right now, you know, at either right under or right above 500. So everybody's having a pretty decent year right now, in my opinion, in the pick'em. So we'll run through that. All right. Texter gets in. Give us a little thought if you don't mind. Cade's confidence has not been good from the jump this year. My personal belief is that this O-line was bad during camp, and Cade was having to leave the pocket a lot. Dabo probably assumed they didn't look great because of the D-line, regardless of what he said to the media, but if you flip that around, the D-line didn't have to put forth as much effort because the O-line was bad. Coaches probably thought that when the O-line would go up against someone other than our D-line, all would be okay. Speculation, I know. Just trying to rationalize this all. E-Dub, we appreciate the text. You always come in with some quality content. And yeah, you know, again, I don't know if there's any real way to confirm that hypothesis at this juncture, but I think there's probably some level of truth to that, right? Because it's hard. Like, I do want to reiterate, Dabo Swinney and his staff have a very hard job. Like, this is why you have to be a different class cut of human being from a mental perspective to be a head coach at a P4. Like, you got to have thick skin, you got to have mental toughness, the ability to block out the noise, and you have to be able to do your job at a high level and have that acumen and knowledge base. So, like, in all fairness to the staff, maybe even if this were the case, what are you supposed to expect when you don't have any reps against other live body opponents? This is why I'll continue to maintain. We need preseason games in college football. If you want to go the NFL model with the money, and if you want to go the NFL model with the roster churning, you need preseason games to help make things fair if you're going to have this much volatility on a year-to-year basis on your roster. So maybe there's some truth to that, E-Dub. I don't really know. We're all looking to rationalize right now, to be candid with the audience, but we appreciate the text. John, any additional thoughts on that before we kind of bridge out an offensive line conversation, then talk some general college football?
Now let's move forward.
Okay. The last thing I would say would be something you said during break on Clemson, which is that Sadler looked a lot better at tackle than guard. I agree with your assessment. PFF would also agree with that assessment. Maybe that's something we see a little more of in the future. But again, I'll wrap back to the point I made at the beginning of the week to put a bow on this. Nobody's starting spot should be safe. And you should be prioritizing playing your underclassmen to see what you've got for the future at certain positions. Maybe O-line is one of those spots. I would love to see more Braden Jacobs at left tackle going forward. Maybe even some Sadler kicking out the tackle as well. Because these guys got to play better, and you need to have at least the fear of competition in your heart and that your job is not safe is the biggest thing for me for Clemson football right now. So that's where I'm at. All right, let's put it behind us. Let's talk a little general college football. We start on our pick'em contest from the top going down. All right, Utah, hand up here for both John and I. Wow. Number one, I'm mad at Kyle Whittingham. I have a complaint to make this morning. I am mad at Kyle Whittingham, and I'm not afraid to say it. Number one, let's just go ahead and say this. 34-10. Texas Tech creamed Utah off the face of planet Earth. Their quarterback got benched in this one, and Morton slash injured was dealing with a little bit of something. Will Hammond came in, and he played really quality ball for Texas Tech. But the main issue for Utah was that they couldn't move the ball on offense. You know what would have been really valuable information to have coming into the week, John, relating this Utah team?
What's that?
That their quarterback was in a walking boot and didn't practice all week. You want to know what Kyle Whittingham did and his genius for the Big 12 availability report? Listed the whole team as questionable and gave the media zero indication that Devin Dampier was dealing with an injury issue. That would have changed my complete... Like, I'm not trying to pass off. I can live with winning and losing. Lord, I'm like 21-18. It doesn't matter. Wins, losses, the pick'em is what it is. I don't care at the end of the day. I'm mad at Kyle Whittingham for not having the integrity with the availability report that he should have. Because if your quarterback's not practicing on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and can't put pressure on his foot and is in a boot, that is something everyone needs to know. That needs to be publicly disclosed information. I think that's a fair ask with the current rule set. I don't know if it would have impacted the game at the end of the day. Utah's clearly got some issues. It got really out of hand late. It was 10-3 at halftime, and then their defense gave out of gas. But my pick would have been completely different if I would have known Devin Dampier was in a walking boot, because what does he do best on a football field, John? Run with the ball. Come on, Whittingham.
I think the thing that I took away from this game is Morton may have been Wally Pipped here. Like, getting knocked out of this game, that may be the last we see of him, because Will Hammond came onto that field as inspired of a young man as I have seen in a long time. And the way he was, like, headbutting people in the huddle and shouting at everybody, the guy looked like he chugged 4 Red Bulls and then took the field and delivered. Absolutely delivered. I'm very curious to see what Texas Tech does moving forward with that quarterback position, because I thought Will Hammond gave that team the spark they desperately needed in a close game at the time.
Yeah, and like, this was 10-3 after 3 quarters of play. This was an uber-competitive football game, and to be honest, I took a step back and in a little bit more of a calm state after expressing every 4-letter word in the book in my own apartment to Kyle Whittingham for screwing me out of his pick'em pick. The Utah defense showed up and played some really hard-nosed football through 3 quarters. They just couldn't run the ball or stay on the field. Sound familiar? 6-5-4 Roar if you want to check in. Big-time win for Texas Tech. That Red Raiders lines of scrimmage are loaded on both sides. They've got good skill guys as well. Definitely a team to keep your eye on in the Big 12 as we forge forward. TCU-SMU is the next game on our contest. To be honest, I think Texas Christian's got a pretty good football team this year. And I think the pendulum might have swung a little bit too far on Sonny Dykes in the wrong direction after a down year. Their quarterback has impressed me. Their skill guys impressed me. I think SMU is at the point where they are what they are, which is they have a really good quarterback. They have a really good play caller. Offense is never going to be the main priority as far as concern goes. I don't think they could stop me, you, and Nick Costello right now at Southern Methodist. I mean, 379 passing yards for Josh Hoover on 22 completions. It looked effortless for TCU's offense at times. I just think one side of the ball is really good, one side of the ball is really bad for SMU.
I think that's accurate. TCU is a very good football team.
Yeah.
And Josh Hoover can spin it. Is he the best quarterback in that league?
I was going to... Sawyer's good and Levitt's good. The Big 12 might be underrated.
Big 12's always underrated. That's their identity.
Hand up for me as well. The Big 12's got some offenses that can go, man.
Yep, absolutely.
I don't know how much defense they can play now. I'm not going to go as far as saying that. But I think that whoever the Big 12 representative is in the college football playoff, inevitably, John, I think that's screaming 41-35 final for whoever they end up facing off against. So stock up for TCU. Hoover looked like a stud. Good win for them. Michigan went on the road and got an impressive win at Nebraska. And again, I didn't have much of an X's and O's or analytical evaluation of this game as much as I just blind-faded Matt Rhule and Nebraska in a ranked matchup. I will say this. We troll a lot about the Mahomes gimmick. I don't know if you saw Matt Rhule's press conference. He's 100% right. Dylan Raiola is turning into one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and nobody has anything to say about him other than the fact that he looks like an NFL MVP. He went for 308 yards and 3 touchdowns this week. His run game was non-existent with 31 carries for 43 yards, and his skill guys outside of Ja'Cory Barney Jr. just straight up aren't very good, in my opinion. I think Raiola's the guy. I think next year is the year where Nebraska can take that step into maybe potential college football playoff flirting status, but this year I don't think they've got the skill guys requisite. Underwood looked decent, and Michigan won by 3.
Justice Haynes, darn good football player.
Darn good football player. Good football player, man.
Yeah, holy. He's elite. One of the best backs in the country. I think Michigan's, credit to him, impressive one on the road here with the true freshman there at quarterback. I still think they're trying to figure out who they are.
Yeah.
But when you're 3-1 and you're still trying to find your identity, that's a very good spot to be in.
It's a great spot to be in. I'd sign up for that right now. I think a lot of people would.
I would, but can we talk about literally any other team other than Clemson? It doesn't all have to tie back to Clemson here today.
Nick Costello got in on the personal text line. Nebraska now has lost 27 straight ranked games. 27. Oh, my goodness. I mean, something's got to give at some point, right? Goodness
you would
me.
Think
one where we both got a little bit of a miracle break in the pick'em. Oklahoma takes care of business by 7 over Auburn with a safety to cover the spread. I gotta be completely honest, Auburn got hosed. Oh my goodness, Auburn got hosed. And I don't like playing the ref card, and I will always wrap back to the ultimate points that there are so many plays and individual plays in a game that you never win or lose because of the officials. And I think that that is also evident here with the Oklahoma-Auburn matchup. You had games and you had plays within the game that you could control, that you could have executed better to win the football game. But when you account for an overturned fumble six touchdown, a illegal substitution touchdown that was granted to Oklahoma, and then one of the most heinous no PI calls I've ever seen, I empathized a little bit with Auburn for about 0.2 seconds. Then I remembered who the head coach was, and I was like, oh yeah, Boomer Sooner. Give me that cover. Shout out to Brent Venables.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Auburn would have had a very good case. I think they have a strong case. You know, the league came out and backed them up almost immediately. Don't have your quarterback get sacked 10 times.
Correct.
Don't have your quarterback get sacked 10 times. You did not give yourself enough margin for error to where you let the refs control it. There was so much that Auburn could have done throughout the game in terms of just blocking people.
Yeah.
That maybe you could have executed. Some of those deep shots to Cam Coleman, you know, could have been hit there. Auburn's better than I gave them credit for in the preseason. Happy to admit when I was wrong there, but also I don't think that they're like leaps and bounds better. Like I put it this way, I don't feel like that game should make Austin's take feel validated in the preseason about this team.
Yes, they need to beat
somebody. But also, this game showed me that I was a little more wrong than I was. I think Auburn's just like a 7-5 football team.
Yeah, Auburn's...
That has some talent, but is not an elite football team. And I think it's... I'm curious how this team responds. You know, Hugh Freeze, as obviously we all know, is not my favorite person, far from it. They got to go to A&M this week. I don't feel great about that for Auburn. Oh, and then they've got the Dogs, and they have Missouri. I struggle to think that Hugh Freeze can get this team to flush that loss, flush the ref show, and all of that, and move forward.
Yeah, and Auburn reminds me, before we take a quick break, Auburn's like the guy that wears all his money. They've got the designer, they've got the luxury car, they've got everything that everybody would want, but they're not investing their finances in the right spots. That's what Auburn is to me. Cam Coleman, all these frisbee-catching dog receivers, the skill guys on defense are freaking unbelievable, man. You seen Auburn's DBs? Auburn's DBs can get after it. Lines of scrimmage? That's where you need to beef up a little bit to take that next step if you're Auburn, man. Invest your money and invest your NIL in the right spots is what I have to say for Auburn. Because guess what? This program's got financial backing. This program's got a crazy fan base. This program's got history. This program's got one of the best environments in all of college football. And they play in one of the big boy leagues. Auburn's not that far away. I don't know about the head ball coach, but they're not that far away from like a resource and finance perspective. I just think maybe we need to chill out on one less five-star wide receiver and use that money on two offensive guards next cycle, and you'll see them take that next step forward. Simply put, this has to become a more balanced football team for Auburn to reach the heights that they want to reach. Still believe it could be a 7-8 win football team, and I think they've done a lot of good things throughout the course of this season, and there's a lot of reasons to be encouraged, but Auburn's the guy that wears all their money. Less receivers, less skill guys, more lines of scrimmage play, and you'll see a tick up and a stock up for Auburn going forward. All right, quick break. We'll be talking about the rest of the games from our pick'em slate last week and then shifting gears in the upcoming segment.
Welcome to the Ingles Table, a delicious destination with recipes galore. Need to whip up a dessert, entree, side dish? No problem. The experts from the Ingles Table take you through it step by step with expert tips and advice along the way. Find the Ingles Table at ingles-markets.com or swing by the store and pick up your free copy of the Ingles Table magazine. And let's get cooking. Ingles, low prices, love the savings.
Estes Heating and Air is here to keep your family cool in the summer and warm in the winter with premium Heil units, supercharged with 100 years of superior engineering and quality manufacturing. Estes is Clemson alumni-owned and celebrating 26 years of serving Tiger fans across Oconee, Pickens, and Greater Greenville. Be sure to like their Facebook page for giveaways, promotions, and specials. That's E-S-T-E-S Heating and Air on Facebook to win prizes and receive specials on HVAC services and installs to keep your family comfortable all year long with Heil units. Depend on them.
At Koala Insulation of Greenville, we specialize in spray foam insulation, the most premium insulation option to insulate your home while also sealing any air leaks. Spray foaming the roof deck of your attic can also get you the opportunity to turn your attic into usable space and is the ultimate pest control solution. Right now, you can receive up to $1,050 in rebates from Duke Energy and get up to $1,200 in federal tax credits. Call Koala Insulation today, 864-867-1779.
Currently car shopping? State Credit Union now has auto loan rates as low as 4.25% APR. Plus, you'll have no car payment for up to 90 days, just in time for the holidays. Visit one of State Credit Union's 19 full-service branches or their website, scscu.com, and apply online for your new car loan today. That's scscu.com. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by the NCUA.
In 1977, Bo started frying chicken so full of real Southern flavor, folks are still talking. They say it's the bold seasoning and hand breading that make our chicken the crispiest, the juiciest, the Carolina legend. Legends last, but this $5.99 leg and thigh deal won't.
It's Bo time.
The South Carolina Education Lottery definitely allowed me to really find myself, to get an education, and then use it as a springboard in really launching my career. That's what the Life Scholarship did for me.
Knowing that I can go to where I want to go to, study what I want to study, having the Life Scholarship made that possible for me.
The South Carolina Education Lottery. A better you, a better us, a better South Carolina. Visit sceducationlottery.com/betteryou.
At Certified Diesel, we value keeping your diesel truck running smoothly and efficiently. Located at 2209 Highway 292 in Inman, South Carolina, we specialize in light-duty diesel truck repairs and maintenance. Whether you drive a Powerstroke, Cummins, or Duramax, our expert technicians have you covered. Avoid the hassle of dealership maintenance and choose us for all your diesel needs. Call and visit us today at 864-345-4568 or check out our services online at CertifiedDieselLLC.com.
Hey, 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 it's the Queen of Clean here at Royal Flush Toilet Rentals. Give us a call at 864-238-8800. We've got your portable toilet rentals, hand wash stations, luxury restroom toilet trailers, septic tank services, and holding tanks. So whenever you need to speak with the Queen of Clean, call Royal Flush at 864-238-8800.
A car accident can change everything in seconds. Don't let the insurance companies decide what your case is worth. At Smith Jordan Law Firm, we stand up for accident victims, fighting for the compensation you need to recover and move forward. Call Smith Jordan Law Firm today at 864-343-2222 or visit smithjordan.com. Your consultation is free. Smith Jordan Law. We are local attorneys with a proven track record.
Danny Ford here for my good friends at Bennett Equipment, who have stood the test of time selling and renting construction equipment for 25 years now. Bennett is one of the top five dealers in the country for Takeuchi compact equipment, and when you deal with Bennett and Takeuchi, you get the quality, dependability, and service you expect and deserve. So call or stop by today and tell them Danny Ford sent you. Take it from me, when you need equipment, buy it or rent it from Bennett.
From kickoff to the final whistle, your front row seat to college football lives here on 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar, part of the ESPN family.
Final segment of hour number two of the program. Facts and Childress, John Hyatt hanging out, 105.5, 97.5, The Roar, 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to get in. We're running through some results of this past weekend. We're going to start to preview some games of the upcoming weekend. We would love for you guys to join us and participate in the show. All right, where do we leave off? Michigan, Nebraska. All right, so NC State, Duke. Duke got the win. Duke got the win big. And it was kind of what I was anticipating. And by I say big, I mean they put up 45 points. They gave up 33. I think that my preseason eval on Duke was off with the defensive side of the ball. I thought that this defense was going to give us a lot more than we've seen thus far. But one thing I got right on Duke is that Mensah is one of the best players in the entire country. I mean, this kid for Duke at quarterback is freaking unbelievable, man. I know I say it every week. He amazes me. He truly does. He can make all the throws. He's got the arm talent. And then NC State, you know, this was Duke losing a game in the way that, or Duke winning a game, rather, in the way that Duke had lost games in the previous two. They win the turnover margin, you win. You lose the turnover margin, you lose. There is a correlation to results there. So I was happy to see the Blue Devils on the right side of the coin with the turnover margin. Bailey's three interceptions were costly, and Duke wins at 45-33 over the NC State Wolfpack.
I also think Duke found a complimentary run game in this one that they have not had in other other contests. Something that I have been wrong about. Hollywood Smothers, good football player for NC State.
He's a good player.
Yeah, Bailey cuts down those turnovers. This is a much different football game, but, you know, credit to Duke. They took care of business at home. Got the job done.
Got the job done. Step
in another
right
one that I was very wrong on this past week. I was wrong on a lot of stuff this last weekend.
To be fair, week three, week four is where we start to see things go haywire, and that becomes pretty hard to project. You're still like, we're all right jam-packed in like sardines for the season total right now. I will say this.
Went from 7-3 last week to 3-7.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
It's not ideal.
Not the swing you're looking for.
I'm more concerned about the morning crew getting their butt whooped by the afternoon crew right now. We got to pick it up as a crew. So, calling out everybody, Mickey, myself, you, Will, Morgan, Mike... We got to step it up. We got to step up our caliber because right now we're like 8 games in the hold of the afternoon crew. Long season, and we've seen crazier things happen in this contest before. A couple texts getting in on the ABS Code Roofing text line. What happened to the Fighting Bielamas? Indiana just whipped them. Yeah, I want to get to this. And oof, we talked about Indiana yesterday. 63-10, to be candid, I think it could have been 85. I'm being dead serious. I think it could have been 85. Like, Indiana called off the dogs very, very early in comparison to what I would have, which is why I don't have the maturity level to be a P4 head coach, because I would have ran it up like we were playing the video game. Number 19 Indiana beats number 9 Illinois 63-10. What on earth? I mean, Illinois rushing the football as a team, 20 carries, 2 yards. Like, we can talk about the defense getting gashed to oblivion, and that's one thing. Indiana's lines of scrimmage play are elite, or at least they look the part thus far, and I think they were pretty darn good last year. Your thoughts on this one?
Indiana, talk about a coach that's able to push the right buttons and pregame to get guys fired up. Cignetti does that about as good as anybody in the country. I think Elijah Surratt's one of the better receivers that we have in the country. He's fantastic. Fernando Mendoza, that's about as close to a perfect game that a quarterback can have. Only 2 incompletions and 5 touchdowns on the day. Yet Texter 6094 got in. Mendoza is my Heisman front runner. With the injury to John Mateer right now, Fernando Mendoza does have an opportunity here to really skyrocket up the Heisman list.
He also has a chance to be the number one pick because all these top quarterbacks are playing like crap, and he's got all the physical tools, and now he's got a better supporting cast than he did at Cal, and the tape is starting to check out in a more NFL-style offense. I think everything's out there in front of them for Mendoza and this Indiana team. And even if we ran through the schedule yesterday, even if you lose both of your big dog games, I still think you get in at 10-2.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
You're playing on the road, but who cares? You're in.
I think right now Indiana is the fourth, arguably third best team in the Big Ten. I think you can make a conversation right now through 4 games of the season that they're as impressive as what Penn State's done, if not more so.
Agreed.
You know, I think Indiana needs to be taken very seriously in this league. You know, I know Ohio State's number one. We haven't seen anything since week one from them. I know Penn State hasn't really played anybody yet. Same with Oregon. But right now, I feel as good about Indiana as I do any other team in this league.
Yeah. Texter gets in and says, I called you crazy for saying Mendoza could be the number one pick a few months ago, but you don't look crazy right now. Good call on his talent. I'm not going to give myself too much credit here because I think all these quarterbacks suck. I've said that pretty frequently throughout the course of my evaluation. Like, I think this current quarterback class is terrible in comparison to the last couple of years and what we've seen. I think Mendoza might just be the best of bad options. Like, all these guys are super flawed, man. Like, Cade was the projected number one pick coming into the season. He still clearly has issues with relation to mechanics, pre-snap IQ, and more. Sellers has got massive foundational issues as a passer, albeit it's taking a step in the right direction. Garrett Nussmeier's been dealing with injury issues. I think his arm is a little bit overrated, and maybe his NFL traits get a little bit overrated. So then it's just like, you got a guy like Mendoza. And I'll tell you right now, another guy I said in the preseason that I thought was going to catch a lot of people off guard that's playing well and shooting up NFL draft boards. The two biggest stock risers in the NFL draft were the two guys I told you preseason, Mendoza and Carson Beck. And again, I don't think that these guys are good. I don't think that these guys are NFL starter, franchise QB caliber players. I just think it's a QB desperate world in the NFL, John, and like something's got to give, right? You know you're going to see a certain amount in the first round every year. You know you're going to see a certain amount in the top 10 every year. So I think Mendoza and Beck are two guys that have a chance to continue to rise because they've got really good situations and really good O-lines. And then when you're 6'5 with a good arm, you're going to get the physical trait bump as well.
I think Mendoza can play at the next level.
I think he can
start at the next level.
I
think he could be a day one starter for an NFL team next year. And I would not be offended if the Pittsburgh Steelers try to find a way to manipulate the draft to get him to replace Aaron Rodgers after his 1 year stint in Pittsburgh. Yeah. I am, out of all the quarterbacks in the country, looking at projecting to the next level.
You like Mendoza?
I like Mendoza by far more than everybody else in the country.
I like that too. I think that he's really impressive, man. He's just a good freaking player. But yeah, so Indiana long term, before we shift gears to the next couple games, do we think that this is a college football playoff caliber team right now? Because
yes.
I think it's kind of hard to argue in their current state.
Yes, absolutely.
This reminds me of when they blew 5-1 Nebraska out 56-7, and everybody thought that it was a lot more about Nebraska than it was Indiana. And then we got a couple weeks down the line, and we were like, oh, wait, no, that was about Indiana. Indiana's really good. I think something similar is unfolding here. I get it's not your traditional blue blood protected brand in Indiana football. They're really freaking good, y'all. They're really freaking good again. And also, just last thing on Indiana, because I've done a lot of research on this team, and I've actually watched a lot of this tape, because one thing that stuck out to me, talent ID in the transfer portal, top freaking notch at Indiana. And so that leads me to believe, I'm like, okay, like, who's running the director of player personnel is Mike Ferreira. So that's a name I would keep your eyes on if for a bigger program to potentially come poach. Their director of scouting is John Schroff. Their assistant athletic director for player personnel is Matt Wilson. And then general manager as well is doing a great job. So this is a really, really dangerous football team and program going forward with the current way that the staff and the front office are putting guys in position to succeed. And you know what? They also have a giant, giant staff of analysts to help them out on the sidelines with situational football. I think that's something that you should be taking advantage of if you have the resources to do such. So shout out to Indiana football, spreading some Hoosier propaganda here on a Wednesday morning. Next game of the contest was Arizona State-Baylor. I took Arizona State. I got bailed out. I got nothing else to say. That was a really good and fun football game to watch. Arizona State did their best to lose it by blitzing again with a lead. Hello? Is there no like internal looking in the mirror effect here where it's like, hey, we lost a playoff game this way, and hey, we lost the game to Mississippi State this way. So you want to know what they did to Sawyer Robertson? They did it again. They rolled it right back out there on a game-winning drive, and they blitzed him. Thankfully for Arizona State, there was enough time to go down on the game-winning drive and get the job done. Levitt and co. keep their college football playoff hopes alive, and they win it by 3.
I still feel like I was correct on all my Sawyer Robertson takes in the preseason.
Yeah, you
still think he is elite? I think the team around him is not.
The defense, man. The defense just hasn't
Which is shocking with Dave Aranda
yeah.
running the show here. The defense has been poor, but hey, you give credit to Arizona State here. They fought. They were resilient. They got the job done.
Next up is one where I would have been 8-2 this week if I wouldn't have just gone on the island for two picks. I went on the island, and when you go on the island, you take an inherent risk. Florida got mollywopped. And what's unfortunate about this is, like, my read on the game was still accurate. DJ Lagway just sucks at football. Like, that's literally all it is. Florida has a top 5 defense in America, folks. Like, I don't think people will realize this or give this football team anywhere near the amount of credit that they deserve because of what the record showcases and because of what the offense has put on tape. This defense played Miami as well as any defense will play Miami this season. I mean, 4 yards a carry. Beck goes 17 for 30 for 160 yards, no touchdowns, and a pick. Miami will not have an offensive performance that poor again this season. Now we look at the other side of the box score. DJ Lagway was 12 of 23 for 61 yards. Dude. Oh my goodness. This was 13-0 at half. Florida scored to make it 13-7 headed into the fourth quarter. Miami was able to put it out of sight, out of mind down the stretch because, again, Florida couldn't move the ball. So hand up on this one. I went on the island. I was wrong. I still am convinced that Florida has one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the country. It just doesn't matter because they've got me at quarterback.
The DJ Lagway thing is so hard to figure out. I think you're right. I think he just may not be very good. You know, with all the injuries and no time to rep, no time to practice at all. I just think the Florida thing is a very disjointed mess. The defense is good. You're right. I think Miami did enough to hold on to win the football game here. They didn't really have to do a ton because Florida is just completely broken right now. Texter gets in. You're still kind of back at Florida a little bit. Texter gets in. I think Florida may beat Texas. Is that crazy?
I can't fall for the gimmick again with Florida, but I will say this. They're going to be in every game that they play in because their defense is elite. Like, they have a unit that is undeniably top seven in the country on that side of the football. And the thing that was crazy here, they had multiple lines of scrimmage players injured on the defensive side in this game, and they still held Miami to 4 yards a carry. And Miami's offensive line is arguably the best in the country. Florida is wasting the best defense they've had in a decade in Gainesville this year, and they've got nothing to show for it, and the whole coaching staff's getting fired. It really is a shame, man, because those defensive guys are doing their job.
Also, Reuben Bain and Mezador is the best defensive end tandem in the country.
Oh, yeah. Not even close. Reuben Bain has arguably been the best player in the country.
Yes. He's been the best player in the country through four games. Absolutely no argument here.
You know what he looks like, Reuben Bain Jr.? He looks like a guy that doesn't care about the money he's getting this year or the NFL money. He looks like a guy that wants to win a national championship for Miami. And that's really, really admirable. Got to give him credit where it's due there. We're going to talk a little Missouri, South Carolina, Clemson, Syracuse, then shift to preview mode on the other side of a quick break. Hour number three up next.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM 50.